Well, for me, 2012 is a meme that has recently tipped. Meaning that it is reaching the point where it's something that's becoming, on its way to becoming common knowledge, that people will refer to the Maya calendar in 2012. And to use Malcolm Gladwell's terms, it's something that has a lot of stickiness to it, meaning that people will keep coming back to it, and they'll be seeing it in a variety of different places. So 2012's been around for a while. In fact, the first people talking about it, it's been around for about 20 years or more.
Right.
But it is recently, and in part due to, I think, Daniel Pinchbeck's book, that it's coming into common knowledge and has become such a sticky meme that it's now showing up in major pop culture, including a couple of major motion pictures. I felt the first one that really began to give it some attention was Mel Gibson's Apocalypto,
mm-hmm.
which is on the ancient Maya, and the title refers to the apocalypse.
What did you think of that?
I was not as appalled as I thought I was going to be. It was not as violent as... Yeah, we can move somewhere else if you want.
Okay.
It was not as violent as I had anticipated it to be, and I'd read a lot about it in the year before it, so I sort of knew what was coming.
But is he historically accurate? Go
ahead. No, absolutely not.
No.
But he's not absolutely historically inaccurate. It's like any other myth. There's enough to it to make it believable. But he hangs on at a lot of things that are simply not true.
So we got this meme, this phenomenon, building within the popular psyche, popular or whatever.
Right. Only 5 years away.
5 years away. We've had apocalypse scenarios in the past. Is this just the scenario du jour, or is there something behind it? What is it about the calendar? Does the calendar actually stop? Or is
no.
it the end of a cycle when another cycle begins?
It's the end of a cycle when another cycle begins. But 2012 is manifesting itself at a time when there's a lot of preoccupation with end-of-world scenarios. I think there was a lot of... I hate to say this in the sick way that it sounds, but I think there was a lot of disappointment and dissatisfaction when Y2K didn't turn out to be the end of the world.
The cleansing, the purification, yeah.
And I've been trying to describe 2012 as a kind of spiritual Y2K. That just like Y2K was a meme that came into consciousness and actually underwrote a tremendous bubble in the dot-com industry. And I think we could probably say that the internet and Silicon Valley and the dot-comers were largely underwritten by a lot of the investment in Y2K preparedness.
Good point.
The internet, which was created as a result of that, has provided a context for interest in 2012 to spread like wildfire.
Right.
And the internet is also something that's fostered conspiracy theories. And people are seeking meaning and connectedness and are going to find it in a variety of ways. And then one of the things that I think has given a couple of things that I think have given to what 2012 its sort of compelling presence is that the Bush administration has depleted government authority of most of its credibility. It's created an environment in which just about any explanation makes sense, because the official explanation is something that we know is loaded with lies and misinformation and myths, such as weapons of mass destruction or
right.
ties between Saddam Hussein and 9/11.
Yeah, we know the lies. We all know what...
A lot of lies out there. So other stuff becomes credible. And interestingly, I think Y2K is manifesting itself parallel in a fashion to a lot of the speculation that happened in the 70s at the same time that Watergate was unfolding.
Are you a debunker?
Yeah. And one of the things that I find fascinating about 2012 is that I think it's providing a rich context for the birth of new religious movements.
Well, isn't the fact that we are stepping out of our everyday, the mundane, to even consider such grand ideas, and all of it that's getting lumped into it with the crop circles and Europe. But even the fact that we are considering something larger than this, isn't that kind of an expansion of consciousness? Isn't that a raising of consciousness in a way?
Yeah, but have we ever not done that? Have we ever not dreamed?
Yeah, no, you're right.
You know, one of the things that Pinchbeck points to, and this was part of the theme of his first book, he's been attached, and this is an article that ran in Rolling Stone last year, with a sort of return to psychedelics and the use of entheogens for expanding consciousness.
Which is, I mean, he's like the modern Castaneda.
Well, yes, to a certain extent, although Castaneda hated the use of hallucinogens, was appalled by the fact that he had somehow sparked this movement, and in fact, in his books, did not write correctly about the use of plants that he was referring to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Castaneda would have been appalled at the idea that he sort of was somehow promoting the use of these.
It seemed to me in 2012, the Quetzalcoatl, that Pinchbeck snubbed Castaneda.
Yeah.
Only two references.
I think he did. He tends to snub Castaneda, although I think Pinchbeck tends to snub people and then go on to imitate them. And if you look at 2012, Return of Quetzalcoatl carefully, you'll see that's precisely what he does with José Arguelles.
Yes,
indeed. Who he paints as an acid casualty and then goes on to sort of imitate Arguelles in saying, well, yes, we really do need to adopt a different calendar.
But he does point out the flaws in Arguelles' calendar.
He does, but he doesn't point out the flaws in the calendar that he seems to like better, which is Carl Johann Calamans, which is even more fantastic.
All right, so the calendar. That's the, I mean, Sulkins and Tons and... you have to take a long time. There has to be a long period of concentration to learn this thing. This is not an easy system, is it?
It's hard to say. I mean, it can be easy for those people who like numbers and who like cycles. If you like card games, it's not that much more difficult than poker.
Really?
It's numbers, it's patterns, it's collections of things. And people who are interested in tarot or Yi Jing, you know, it's not that much more of a difficult system to understand. However, Arguelles and others have hung on the Maya calendar, all kinds of things that there's really not much evidence that the Maya ever saw, and they're really creating a new astrological system. But it
so essentially, it's, what it's based, is the Mayan it, calendar?
In a nutshell, it's a series of interlocking cycles.
With huge units of time, though, right?
Well, increasingly huge units of time. The basic unit of time is the day, and days are bundled into months, and months are bundled into years, and years are bundled into groups of 20 years. Groups of 20 years are bundled into groups of 400 years, and groups of 400 years are bundled into groups of 8,000 years, and those are bundled into increasingly larger cycles.
Has any other civilization bundled time in such huge quantities before?
Yes. I think if you look at Hindu calendars, the Hindus talk about eons and eons of time. And that hasn't received as much attention. And an interesting question, you know, the Chinese have a lunar-based calendar. The Hindus also have a very complex calendar. Why is the Maya calendar so much more appealing than these existing calendars? Well, I would suggest it's because the Maya, since the very beginning of their investigation, have been painted as mysterious and esoteric. And then here's another...
Well, how can you get any more mysterious and esoteric than Hindu?
Well, here's where it comes from, that the Maya have been specifically linked to the lost continent of Atlantis and extraterrestrial visitors from intergalactic civilizations. And that's something that you don't typically find in mysteries of the Far East. you know, who are sort of mysterious on their own without reference to lost continents or ETs.
Do you find that there's any credibility to you? Any shred of credibility to those links?
No.
Is there any evidence, anything uncovered? I mean, there's the hieroglyph of the supposedly astronaut Mayan.
Right, and that was Eric von Däniken who sort of identified as Maya astronaut. No.
No, okay.
No, none whatsoever. None whatsoever, but that doesn't keep people from fervently believing in ETs, which are the new angels.
If it's bullshit, it's beautiful bullshit. Are they selling us beautiful bullshit at a time when we want it?
Yeah. And here's a... Fear sells even better than sex.
Yes, it does. Yeah, look at
fear sells even better than sex. Yeah. Look at the Iraq War. Look at the state of R-rated movies now. I mean, the theaters are filled with horror films, and it's not just because Halloween is coming up. It's fear sells.
Do you think that we are creating the cogito ergo sum? We're creating.
Well, that's a very interesting question. And that's what I've thought about 2012 from the first time I heard about it, is that I don't think that the Maya had any foresight as to what was going to happen. I don't think the Maya had a clue about what our civilization was going to be like.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that they foresaw their own decline. And, you know, we know that the Maya suffered a tremendous decline, and their civilization... their major cities, their learning was gone centuries before the Spanish arrived. However, just as Y2K became its own reality in terms of the dot-com bubble, I think 2012 will create its own reality in terms of buzz in the newosphere, and pop culture, and it will permeate consciousness through a variety of different avenues. Among those will include pop culture, films, and television, but also graphic novels and the gaming community, the underground community of psychedelics and entheogen users, the New Age community of purveyors of alternative medicine, crystal healing, meditation, channeling, Reiki massage, a whole host of things. It will be very interesting to see whether what was at one time very underground and esoteric, to the extent that it was called occult or hidden, becomes mainstream.
But I'm saying, are we dreaming up this reality? Are we literally cooking it up just by accepting the meme?
No, I think there's a feedback going on.
There's a feedback?
If it sells, it lives.
It's all an economic feedback.
I think a lot of it's economic feedback.
You know, at one point, you hope for something like this. You hope for an evolution, a spiritual... It just seems like it's time for that to happen.
Well, it's fostering discussions. And among the kinds of discussions that it's fostering are the same kinds of discussions that I've been pushing my whole career, which is gaining insight into non-Western cultures.
Yeah.
And realizing that the Western tradition, the Jewish and Christian traditions, or the Muslim tradition... and the effects that they've had on Western consciousness are really just a small piece of the total picture of human experience. And it's not surprising at all to me that in this age of rapid globalization, that perceptions and appreciation and investigation and understanding of non-Western cultures is something that fascinates us and is appealing. Because I think we're realizing that our own particular historical trajectory has brought us to a place that we may not really want to be. I tend to think that the 2012 thing is a primarily American phenomenon. What I've been curious about, what I haven't yet been able to investigate myself, is how much it plays in places like China or India or Africa or even Latin America, where my biggest fear about the whole 2012 thing is what happens when all of this comes back to the Maya themselves. You know, they're an oppressed indigenous people that is struggling against the forces of globalization. Are the messages of 2012 as being promoted by Pinchbeck and others at all relevant to their lives?
That was in this.
Bob Sittler's done
yeah,
some good
that
work
was,
on that.
That was... Now, didn't he say that there are more Maya living today
than there were in ancient times?
Right,
yes.
There are like 6 million Maya today, and
that's,
and that's
right.
way more than there was back
and
in the classic era.
And the Maya are by no means homogeneous. There are at least 29 different formally recognized Maya languages. Excuse me. And the term Maya itself is a post-colonial invention.
Maya meaning what?
Well, when Columbus arrived, he basically said, what do you call the people over there? And he got the answer, the Maya. And he said, and what do you call the people over there? And the answer that came back was the Paya. And those two names sort of stuck for groups to the west and east of northern Honduras.
Is there a specific meaning for it?
We don't know what it is.
There probably was.
But it was not used by the Maya themselves, who referred to themselves as Quiche or Capchiquel or Chol or Chorti or Yucatec or whatever other language group that they spoke. But there were well over 30 different and distinct Maya languages and very different ethnic groups. And their beliefs were by no means uniform. The Maya were never organized under a single ruler or empire. They remained competing city-states, each of which had elements of ideology in common with the others, but in each one, the rulers essentially retold their histories for their own political purposes.
Mm. And, as we do today.
And one of the tremendous cycles or replays, or it's kind of an ironic parallel, is that the ancient Maya themselves recreated their calendar and their mythology for their own political and religious purposes. And so what's being done with 2012 and the Maya calendar today is really, in some ways, a replay of what the Maya elite themselves were doing years ago.
If they recreated it 1,000 years ago, then we're getting all worried about a sham calendar. Or all excited about a sham calendar.
Well, I don't know whether the... I mean, does it matter if the calendar is sham, if the goals are ones that are... it becomes another vehicle, like all kinds of things that we use, whether it's, you know, art or music or philosophy or the American way or the concept of democracy or... I mean, it becomes a vehicle
for
driving belief and social change. And we can argue and debate over the authenticity of the underlying text, but that's a bit like the copious and abundant Talmudic debate,
right?
Over ancient texts. You know, we can be debating this until we're blue in the face. We'll never know what's truly authentic. But what matters is the debate, and that's what I think what a Talmudic scholar would tell you as well.
It's the discourse.
It's the discourse and the insights and the understandings that are gained in the debate and the discussion.
How better to motivate people to actually get off their butts and do something than to say, you don't have much time, get going.
I have nothing against inspiration or artistic expression. Where I get into problems is when someone says, well, this is not speculation, this is not real. Imagination, this is real. Or when they imply that you can only have, and this is a problem I have, when they imply that you can only have these visions if you're using powerful psychedelic drugs. And my favorite quote from Salvador Dali, who painted these amazing pictures, he was once asked in the 1960s whether he ever used hallucinogens. And Dali said, I don't do drugs, I am drugs. An artist, an inspired artist, does not need to use entheogens, nor do they necessarily open up a whole new world. Sure, for the average person, they can and they will.
But sometimes it does, too.
But sometimes it does. There's no question that sometimes it does. And there's no question for a lot of people it will.
A distorted reality is a tradition in literature.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. But we've always been able to dream. Everyone is able to dream. And paying attention to dreams has always been what's driven human motivation and inspiration. Dreaming is an amazing thing and a wonderful thing. But when you begin insisting that dreams are reality and that anyone who doesn't understand that is wrong, then you begin having some problems.
Isn't that the core, though, that theory of we are living in a dream. Isn't that the core of many Eastern religions?
It is. Yes, it is. But they, but in those Eastern religions, Buddhism in particular, would not say the dream is reality. They would say...
The dream is a dream.
The dream is a dream. They would say nothing is reality. It's all Maya and illusion. And the truth is nothingness. The truth is that it's all illusion.